Fellow Falcoholics, what is up? Welcome to episode 198 of the Falcoholic Live. I am your host, Kevin Knight, joined by my excellent co-host, as always, Adnan Ikic. He is at Say Which Way. Adnan, how are you doing this evening?
Doing well. We're knocking at the door now.
Yeah.
This is a late July tradition right here. Training camp is absolutely on the horizon, and you know, just because it's not the season doesn't mean that the busy season doesn't start here. So we'll have practices to talk about. We'll have, you know, stuff to overreact about in Atlanta and around the NFL. And, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way.
Oh, yeah, big time. We got, we did get some news, unfortunate news, I guess, dropped on us this week with Eddie Goldman announcing his retirement. So we'll open up with that discussion. But we'll also be bringing you our quintessential training camp preview, giving you guys a look at sort of the things that we are going to be watching for early on, the things that you should be watching for, the couple of battles that we're sort of most interested in, that sort of thing. So we appreciate everyone for tuning in with us for the last, I guess, slow show before the floodgates open in terms of news. But the big thing we'll kick off with here is the Eddie Goldman news. Goldman signed with the Falcons last week, and a week later he has retired. You know, I don't blame him. You know, I looked at the forecast for next week's practices, and I'm, you know, questioning whether or not I should even be there. But I can only imagine for like a 340-pound nose tackle, the sort of you know, calculus that goes into that. But Goldman did decide to retire. Adnan, obviously it's a blow. I mean, who knows how much of a blow considering that he was only just now brought in. So seems like he probably wasn't like a key part of their offseason plan or anything like that. But what's sort of your takeaways from Goldman announcing that he will not be playing football this year?
It was a shock for sure when that news was just dropped yesterday, because Eddie Goldman isn't exactly an old guy. You know, he's, 27 years old at this point. This would be his age 28 season.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's someone that had legitimate opportunity to win that starting nose tackle job for the Atlanta Falcons, which will now probably go to friend of the show, Anthony Rush.
Yes.
Who came on last week. Check out that show if, you know, if you're so inclined and you missed it. It was a nice interview with Rush. But, you know, I get it. You know, football is a grind. An NFL season isn't an easy thing for anybody. And, you know, I guess Eddie Goldman looked at it like, you know, he didn't want to go through, you know, what would have been his eighth NFL season. You know, it's very difficult. And Goldman's someone that has career earnings. I'm looking at Spotrac right now. He's earned about $30 million in his career. He played through his rookie contract. He played through his second career contract. He was, you know, released by the Bears. That second contract was guaranteed him $25 million. So, you know, he decided that he would rather not play football anymore. Maybe wanted to spend some time with his family. He has generational wealth at this point, you know, $30 million. Even if you take away, you know, taxes and agent fees and everything, that still leaves him with, and you know, I'm not an accountant here. I don't have exact figures. That still probably leaves him with like $10 million.
At least.
And that's some, you know, I don't think I'd be able to spend $10 million in a lifetime if we're being completely honest. So I definitely respect the decision. And, you know, it's a decision he's not the first one to make it.
Right.
Kay Green in the chat mentioned it. Andrew Luck a few years ago in 2019 shockingly retired, and he left even more money on the table.
Yeah.
He was a franchise player. He was a franchise quarterback. So, you know, best of luck to Eddie with his life after football. It was a very good career. He'll be fondly remembered by Chicago Bears fans. I'm sure he won't have to pay for a drink in the city of Chicago in most places. So yeah, tip of the cap to him for a very, very good, very strong NFL career. Not a lot of people make it 7 full seasons in the NFL. Yeah. A lot of people earn $30 million. But, you know, he just won't continue with the Atlanta Falcons, and, you know, that's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's respectful of him, I think, to do it before training camp kicked off.
Absolutely.
And I think that's really quite respectful of him to do. And, like, this is a guy I think that may have been contemplating retirement all offseason. This is a player that he had a down year last year after taking 2020 off of COVID and, you know, maybe got a taste of not playing football. I'm like, you know, maybe this isn't so bad. Maybe retirement's not the worst thing in the world. But, you know, he didn't sign anywhere this offseason until the Falcons signed him like a week ago. So it's possible that Goldman was already contemplating retirement this year. And maybe Ryan Pace and Terry Fontenot and the Falcons sort of coaxed him out of it. It's sort of like, hey, you know, why don't you give it a try? Come to camp, you know, see if you want to play for us, you know, and we'll give you this money or whatever. And it seems like they got into agreed to sign, but it seems like after the signing, he maybe thought about it and was like, you know, this isn't maybe what I want to do. And that's fine. Again, clearly this wasn't a key pillar of their offseason, considering this was like a July signing. I think it would have been nice to see him in Atlanta. I think he would have been able to provide some hopefully terrific play for the Falcons, but he made the decision to step away early on his terms, and I respect it. And, you know, just like Falcons great Lance Moore, you know, you know, left on his terms, but I think it was good of him to not drag it out into training camp or anything like that.
And it's an underrated thing to, you know, to retire on your own terms at a relatively young age where, you know, you won't really, hopefully we won't have any serious long-term effects from the sport. You know, we know how brutal this sport can be to these athletes after they retire. You know, playing a game of football is essentially the equivalent of, you know, getting into a car crash every single week, the way you're ramming into each other over and over again. And especially in the trenches at that nose tackle position, you know, you're literally just hitting someone every single snap out there. You can't really take a snap off. So, you know, I definitely understand, you know, the decision entirely why he would step away from the sport on his own terms at a young age. And, you know, after he's set his family up with generational wealth.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense to me. And you know, I think it's, obviously good for him, you know, making the decision, and doing what is best for him. And it doesn't really hurt the Falcons more than it, like, obviously it was nice, but sort of easy come, easy go at this point in the offseason. It's like, you know, we didn't even see practice. Like it was cool to think about, and pour one out for Aaron Freeman, by the way, who I think was like the most excited person in all of Falcons fandom to finally get Eddie Goldman here.
Eric can't have anything nice. Exactly.
It's deserved, certainly, but yeah, So, you know, best of luck, obviously, to Goldman in his future endeavors. Unfortunately, don't get to see him here. But that does bring us to another good topic, which is clearly the Falcons were looking to add to their defensive line. And it could be on the interior like Goldman. It could also be potentially at edge. We've been talking about guys like Trey Flowers. There are still some names out there that are worth considering. I know guys like Danny Shelton is still out there. If they're looking for another nose tackle kind of guy, Linval Joseph, Brandon Williams is a name that's been picking up some steam because of his history with Dean Pease. There's also more sort of three down guys like Derek Wolfe, Malik Jackson, Sheldon Richardson, more like pass rusher types. So there are certainly some options out there. Anyone that strikes your fancy out on anyone of that group that you'd be trying to gun for?
In fairness, I think that they'll let training camp play out a little bit first before really assessing the situation.
Yeah.
But, you know, out of those guys, I'd say Linval Joseph is the big name out there. You know, someone who has also an extensive career, who's a very, very, you know, he was a very great player, a former Pro Bowler back in Minnesota. He was okay last year for the Chargers, really kind of fell off a little bit, which probably explains why he's still a free agent. But you know, that would probably be a name that I'm really looking at more so along the defensive line. But I wouldn't really expect any reactionary signings immediately. I don't think that it's really necessary. I think a lot of those guys will probably still be there and be available after training camp, unless, you know, there's an injury somewhere else, you know, around the NFL and someone decides to scoop some of them up. But, you know, definitely out of those names, I'd probably say Linval Joseph, who was, you know, a former Pro Bowler. I don't know if he made an All-Pro team with Minnesota. But you know, that's definitely a solid name to look at. A very hardy veteran at
Yeah,
least.
yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, Joseph has definitely had a long and storied career. Was once one of the top nose tackles in the NFL. He'll be going into his, I think, age 34 season this year. So, would be more of like a 1 year rental type of signing. But if they're looking for that sort of presence to solidify the interior, it would make sense. You know, with Anthony Rush here,
Was too.
It's. To me, it's like I don't know if the Goldman signing was an indictment of Rush. I sort of don't think it was. So I'm sort of like wondering if they're really going to go. Like, the thing about Eddie Goldman was, yes, that he's a nose tackle. He's going to help your run defense, but he's also capable of pass rushing. So they were sort of maybe going to get a little bit more pass rushing juice from a guy like Eddie Goldman as opposed to sort of a Linval Joseph, who's probably a pure run stuffer at this point in his career. It's similar to like an Anthony Rush. So I wonder if they will go for more of a pass rushing presence or if they'll just sort of, like you said earlier, sort of wait and see. But Brandon Williams obviously makes sense because of his connection with the team. I like Danny Shelton. He's only 28. So if they're looking for another younger guy, I think he's the same age as Eddie Goldman, actually. And Shelton didn't have a great year last year with the Giants, but he has had some good years in the past. And again, you know, another big body in the middle of the defense. So we'll see. You know, former first round pick, did have a great year with New England in 2019. So we'll see. We'll see if anything comes of that or not. But that would be sort of where I'd be looking if they're looking to add more to the defensive line. But Ray Moon here with the $20 tip. Thank you so much, Ray Moon. Appreciate that, brother. Appreciate helping us get to training camp here. Like, I'll plug it and then I'll read Ray's comment. I guess it's a funny one. But yeah, guys, if you're looking to help us get to training camp, the tips and donations this month are going to our training camp fund, which you can see down there at the bottom. So yeah, be sure to ask a question or leave a comment with your donation. Like, we will read and answer those live on the show. We really appreciate that. Like and subscribe, all that good YouTube stuff. Check out the Patreon as well, patreon.com/falcoholiclive if you're interested in taking part in that. Really appreciate all that support, guys. Thank you so much. Ray Moon with the $20. Thank you so much, Ray. He says, "I feel like a stalker lately because I've been watching but not commenting. But how about that retirement? WTF." Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of people are like taking the opportunity to dunk on the Falcons, but I think my read of the situation, which is more favorable to the Falcons, obviously, is that I think that Goldman was probably contemplating retirement before the Falcons signed him, and the Falcons sort of convinced him to give it a shot, and Goldman agreed to do it, and then was like, you know, now that I looked at the forecast, you know, or just had some time to sit on it a little bit and think about it seriously, he was like, you know, actually, I think I would just rather like to stay out of it. So it's sort of an easy come, easy go thing. I don't think it's neat, but it's random. It's kind of silly, but.
There's a lot of reasons to dunk on the Falcons. Like, the Falcons make it so easy on themselves, and they have been for the past few years. I don't think this is one of them. You know, I think like Kevin said, this is just a case of a guy who was probably contemplating retirement either way. You know, he signed with the Falcons. His heart probably wasn't really in it. Then after sitting on it, you know, with training camp looming, he decided he didn't want to play football anymore, which is, you know, completely fine. But you know, that's not a Falcons thing. I think he would have retired from any team at this point. Maybe not a super like contending team. Like, you know, if he was with the Chiefs or something, you know, maybe he would have stuck it out for that final ring chase. But, you know, given given that I don't think that this was, I don't think his mentality was to continue playing football long term, no matter where he was.
Yeah. I mean, and I think it was, you know, maybe like on onset, like maybe if the Chiefs or the Bills had come calling, it's like, okay, maybe I'll stick it out for a Super Bowl ring. I think everyone knows that they're probably not competing for a Super Bowl ring here in Atlanta this year, long term perhaps. But
not next year either,
maybe. Never say never. You know, I don't want to, you know, poo-poo next season yet. You know, we'll wait till after next draft to start poo-pooing next season. But
it's gonna be a fun free agency period too.
Yeah. No, I think we're going to be way too optimistic next year. That's my prediction. Like this year, maybe we're too negative this offseason, but next offseason, we're going to be all in, you know, the other direction. So, it's tough. But I think he made the right call. Like if he was on the fence about playing, better to do it now, not take snaps away from these young guys in training camp and, you know, sort of ride off into the sunset before he even got here. It's sort of like that Simpsons meme where he like, you know, the grandpa comes in, takes off his hat, and immediately turns around, grabs the hat, and walks out. Yeah. So bon voyage, Eddie Goldman. It was fun while it lasted. And we wish you the best of luck. But now that brings us to training camp itself. Hopefully this is the biggest surprise we'll have of all training camp. But at this point, the Falcons rolling into camp with, according to some projections, the worst roster in the NFL, which I think is unfair. I don't think they're the worst roster in the NFL. I mean, there are the Texans do exist. Okay. Like, I feel like it's really disrespectful to put the Falcons below the Texans, but it's going to be an uphill climb for them this year. We all know that, but this is, I think, a roster that has some spots that are encouraging, some spots that are very scary, in a bad way, and some that I think are solid. So offensive line mostly is the scary part, but
left guard, center, right tackle.
Yeah. But I think the where we kick it off with our training camp discussion has to be a quarterback, because that's going to be the battle that everyone's watching. And it's really Marcus Mariota's job to lose. And I got to make sure to say it is officially Mariota, like Mario and Luigi, folks. I was corrected. I usually say Mariota. It is Mariota. So I'm going to do my best to continue saying it the correct way. But I do think it is Marcus Mariota's job to lose. He's been very sharp in OTAs and minicamp, all that stuff. And even if Ridder played really well, I think if it was a tie, it would probably still go to Mariota, because it's a lot to put on a rookie, a third round rookie especially, to go out there week one and start in the NFL when the Falcons really, they don't need to rush him out there. It's certainly possible that Ridder starts week one. I certainly won't say that it's not something that he could do, but I think outside of injury or anything, you know, unforeseen sort of happening, you know, knock on wood for that, I think it's Marcus Mariota's job to lose, but what's your sort of read on the quarterback situation right now? Would you agree with that, Nan?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't think that they spent $6 million. You know, I don't think they gave Mariota $6 million and sacrificed what became a fourth-round compensation pick just for Mariota to be a backup quarterback behind Desmond Ridder. I like Desmond Ridder. We all like Desmond Ridder. We hope that Ridder will get his opportunity this year. But you know, you normally go with the veteran. Like this, I feel like we've been spoiled with Matt Ryan for more reasons than one. And one of those reasons was because in 2008, he came in guns blazing and he immediately, you know, took over that starting job in week one, beat out Chris Redman for it. And led the team to the playoffs, was a rookie of the year. And a lot of current and former players will tell you that Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco changed the game with rookie quarterbacks. Like before Matt Ryan came along and did that, and, you know, Joe Flacco also led that great Ravens team to a playoff win in 2008, upsetting the top-seeded Titans. Before that, the rookie quarterback would come in and he would wait a year. He would wait 2 years. Doesn't matter what his draft pedigree was. And, you know, in those days, especially, the rookie quarterbacks were making a lot more money than they are today.
Yeah.
Ritter is making, what, $5 million over 4 years? $5.4 million over 4 years? So, it's a, you know, it's pretty much pocket change in comparison to other NFL players, other quarterbacks. So, you know, I definitely think that we will, you know, Arthur Smith is probably much more inclined to go with the veteran quarterback who has played in his system, who knows his system. Remember, he coached Mariota a few years ago. And I think that Ritter, I'm on record, I think Ritter will get his chance. Week 8, week 9, I'm looking at that game after that Thursday night game against Carolina. It'll be essentially a mini bye. I think that's the perfect opportunity to put Ritter into that starting lineup, but only if the Falcons are playing under 500. If the Falcons, you know, come out guns blazing and they're 5-4 or 6-4 or, you know, in position to make a legitimate wild card run, it's not fair to Mariota to pull him out if he is doing his part to win those games. Now, if Mariota is, you know, just playing like garbage and the team's looking to fight him, that's a different story. But if he is leading this team to legitimate wins, then you let him stay, you let him play out the season, and then, you know, you see what happens. I don't think that that's going to happen. You know, I've been wrong before. But, you know, I definitely think week 1, I would be, barring an injury, I would be absolutely shocked if Desmond Ridder was the starting quarterback against the Saints in week 1. Absolutely shocked.
Yeah, and the Saints play into it as well there, because, like, for as much as we dunk on the Saints, like, that is maybe the best defense in football. It's certainly up there with the best. So, like, that would be a brutal start for him.
It's also going to be a highly emotional game in week 1, too. Rivalry game against the Saints, you know, home opener. It's probably going to be the only game this season where the Falcons actually sell out the Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's going to be a very, very difficult environment to throw a rookie quarterback in there. And I know, I get it. Ritter has played in some tough environments, you know, at Cincinnati. He played in the college football playoff. He has some big game experience, but, you know, that pales in comparison to, you know, a Falcons Saints week 1 game. Like, this rivalry is absolutely disgusting. And, you know, that environment is, you know, otherworldly when these two teams play, even if it is a home game. The only thing that would be worse would be if that game was in New Orleans, and then, you know, then it's really an unfriendly environment to whoever's lining up under center.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Twisted Torch TV, for the shout out, man. Appreciate that. Welcome to the chat, everybody else. Thank you, guys. I agree with you. I think it's just going to be a really tough hill to climb for Desmond Ridder. The pressure isn't there for the Falcons to start him immediately like it would be if it was a first round quarterback or a top 10 quarterback or whatever. And I just have a hard time believing that Mariota is going to be that bad, that he's going to like lose the battle. And I think Ridder hopefully will look good in the preseason, like very encouraging. To where we're talking about, like, oh, could he possibly start? Like, that would be great. I think he still probably is unlikely to start week 1. I think we could definitely see him by week 10. That's sort of where I'm penciling it in, that game against the Bears. Or like what Adnan said with the sort of mini bye, that could be a great time as well. That's right around that time, too. So, you know, it wouldn't shock me. But there's always the chance that Mariota is playing really, really well. Look, I mean, I'll be honest. Like, I went back on the recommendation of some friends of mine that are film junkies, and they're like, hey, you know, if you want to get excited about Mariota, like, go watch his last couple starts for the Raiders. And, like, I did, and, like, it was good. Like, it was very good. His most recent start for the Raiders, he came in after Carr got hurt. I believe he scored, like, 2 or 3 touchdowns and led a game-winning drive, and that was a crucial game for the Raiders, too. Like, if they'd lost that game, they would have missed the playoffs. So, I mean, that most recent game, that was in 2020, so it's not like it was last season, but it's not like Mariota was bad. And I don't think he's ever really been a bad quarterback. I think he's sort of also never lived up to that number two overall pick, though. And I think that's where a lot of the perception comes. And, you know, if you don't remember who the Titans coach was when they drafted Mariota, I don't blame you. But that was not exactly a good Titans team either. And then when he finally got a chance to be with a competent offensive coordinator in Arthur Smith, he got nerve damage in his throwing hand. So, you know, I think if you want to really have a positive spin for the Falcons and you're really high on them, you're probably saying, look, I think Marcus Mariota is a good quarterback that was in a bad situation and had some bad breaks and now is going to basically have a rebound season and that sort of thing. If you're hoping for the Falcons to be a good team this year, that's what you're banking on. And I don't think it's impossible.
And I mean, I think ideally with Ritter, ideally he makes this into somewhat of a conversation, this training camp and this preseason, because that would, you know, that would be pretty impressive on his end. I don't think he's nearly as, you know, NFL ready. He's not a better football player today than Marcus Mariota. You know, Mariota's been in the league for years. You mentioned it. He looked really good for the Raiders in relief of Carr last year. But, you know, with Ritter, there's a reason why he was a third-round pick after all. Like, he isn't this can't-miss generational prospect the way that Andrew Luck was. He's not exactly what Matt Ryan was in 2008, where the team invested, you know, pretty much its future into Ryan with the third overall draft pick. And, you know, in fairness, I think Mariota right now is better than what Chris Redmond was back in 2008.
Oh, yeah.
No disrespect to Chris Redmond.
The great Chris Redmond, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'll never forget the Bucs game in 2009 after Matt Ryan got turf toe. You know, that fourth and goal slam pass to Roddy White to beat that 1-11 Bucs team led by Josh Freeman.
Legend. Yep.
Absolutely. Shout out to Chris Redmond. But I don't think that, you know, what I'm trying to say is I don't think that Ritter has that draft pedigree either to where you're under pressure as a coaching staff and as a front office to, you know, throw him out there because, you know, the fan base and the owner, you know, they have everything invested into this guy, into this quarterback. And even if he was a first round pick, if he's not ready, he's not ready yet. But especially if he's a third round pick, there's really low pressure to start him, to play him, especially if Mariota ends up, you know, looking better than him in preseason, which I think he will, because, you know, Mariota is an NFL veteran who has won some games before. He has, you know, he is a former number two overall draft pick. He's not exactly, you know, he hasn't lived up to that hype. But even if you're going off of just college tape and, you know, college numbers, Mariota was a Heisman Trophy winner. Like, he was the guy in college. You know, he was better than in college than what Ritter was in college, you know, even back then. And now you add these years of NFL experience. I don't think it'll be that close of a battle. I think we're just trying to talk ourselves into it because we want to be more excited about Ritter. And, you know, we are excited about Ritter. And, you know, we want the young guy to really showcase himself and to really prove to be that long-term answer at quarterback. Because if Desmond Ritter is the long-term answer at quarterback, that's huge for the Falcons.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like, that would be that's a silver bullet for this front office if they just pluck their franchise quarterback in the third round. But we can't rush that process. We can't know that yet. And if we try to throw him out there too early, it could be pretty damaging, especially behind this offensive line, which we'll get to, because this offensive line is, you know, based on what we saw last year, it's a pretty bad offensive line. And I don't think you want to put Ritter behind these terrible pass blockers either right away.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that's why Mariota is going to start. And like, I don't want people to think that I'm just like, oh yeah, Mariota is actually going to be this great quarterback and all this. But I think he gets a bad rap and he's on the Falcons now. So I'm going to cape for him, you know, because he's a Falcon and I have to defend his honor now. But I feel like people get this impression that he's just like a bad quarterback. And really, he's just been sort of mediocre, I guess I would say, as a starter, which that's still impressive. Like, there's only a handful of guys that can start a quarterback in the NFL in the entire world. So, like, let's, you know, put some respect on the man. But for as negative the perception is of Marcus Mariota, his career record as a starter is 29-32. So this is a guy that's almost 500. So it's not even like he's this lopsided losing quarterback. Like, I mean, Jameis Winston has a way worse record as a starter than Mariota, but no one's complaining about Jameis Winston in New Orleans. 62.8 completion percentage, 7.5 yards per attempt over his career, and 77 touchdowns to 45 interceptions, which is like 1.7 touchdown to interception ratio, which is not amazing, but it's not bad either. So this is like, those are respectable, you know, fairly average stats for a starting quarterback. As a rusher, he hasn't been as like deadly as he was in college, but he's been a serviceable rusher as well. He's averaged 6 yards per carry as a scrambler over his career, 21 yards per game on the ground, which is not like Lamar Jackson, Mike Vick numbers or anything like that, but that's respectable. He does have more rushing yards over like 5 years as a starter than Matt Ryan has had in his entire career. So that is, you know, something that he's better than Matt Ryan at. He is a better runner of the football. So that's not necessarily surprising, but just in case you wanted to know. So if you are really high on the Falcons this year, and I know there are lots of you fans out there, and I'm not trying to stomp on your parade, this is your bone that I'm throwing you. If you want to say, like, I think Marcus Mariota is actually a good quarterback and he's actually going to have a chance in Atlanta to do something, that's what you have to hang your hat on offense, is that actually Marcus Mariota is going to be able to basically replicate what Matt Ryan did last year and maybe provide a little bit more on the ground. And, you know, that's what you're hoping for. Now, in order for that to happen, there's a lot of stuff that's going to have to go right. There's a lot of stuff that's going to have to go right. And mostly that's the offensive line, which Adnan mentioned at the top of the show. And the other big battle we're going to be watching that hasn't really, you know, left guard, there actually really isn't much of a battle because the Falcons haven't really brought in any competition for Jalen Mayfield. Center, though, is where we're sort of going to see the fireworks between Matt Hennessy and Drew Dahlman. And then maybe right tackle, we'll see an actual competition between Caleb McGarry and Jermaine Ifedi.
I haven't seen more than a competition.
Go ahead on those battles.
Let's start with center. Falcons didn't really address the center position, which I get it. The last couple of years they spent draft picks. They spent day two draft picks on centers. Hennessy has been a disappointment so far. Drew Dahlman, we didn't really see much of, but you know, he had that RAS score of 99, which we were all very excited about. Both guys are a bit, you know, on the lighter side. Neither guy really has too much strength. That's really given them issues, Matt Hennessy especially. I went a bit more in depth with both of these battles in our Falcons training camp battle series. The center battle was published today, and you know, I'm working on finalizing the right tackle battle. But basically, Matt Hennessy last year was a very, very impressive run blocker. Mm-hmm. He was the third best run blocker in the NFL among every center that, you know, played a meaningful amount of snaps, behind only Creed Humphrey and Jason Kelce, who are the cream of the crop, you know, at center at that position. The Falcons could have possibly had this position addressed for the next 10 years had they just taken Creed Humphrey in the second round last year. But, you know, that's that missed opportunity. That's neither here nor there. And I hope that Richie Grant has a really good season at safety to make that sting a bit less, because Humphrey last year was, you know, on another planet as a rookie. But the issue with Hennessy, and that run blocking even boosted up his PFF grade to a 77.1 overall, which is, you know, that's a very impressive PFF grade. You know, most NFL teams will definitely take that from their center. But the issue is he had a 50.5 pass blocking grade, which made him 34th out of 41 eligible centers who played meaningful snaps. So he was overall the seventh worst center in the NFL. And out of 32 starting centers, you know, each team has one starting center, Matt Hennessy was 34th overall. So he wasn't even at replacement level when it comes to pass blocking, which is a huge issue because he gave up the most quarterback hurries out of any center in the NFL. And out of 988 snaps, he had 632 in pass blocking versus, you know, a little over 350 in run blocking. So pass blocking in today's NFL especially is much, much more important than run blocking. Yeah. So if Matt Hennessy comes out there and, you know, he exhibits the same struggles in pass protection that he did last year, then this team has to look elsewhere. You know, whether that's free agency, whether that's Drew Dahlman, it'll be Drew Dahlman at first because Hennessy's going to probably get pulled. But you cannot have that poor of a pass blocker. You don't want that poor of a pass blocker anywhere along your offensive line. And we have that in three different positions. We'll get to that soon. Drew Dahlman played less than 100 snaps, but you know, it was the same. It was the same story with him, except even more exaggerated. His PFF run blocking grade was a 92.3, which was the second. It was the second best in the NFL among any center that played any amount of snaps. So you know, Dahlman didn't really register the minimum amount of snaps.
Right.
But out of centers who played any snap, he was second behind only Creed Humphrey in run blocking grade. Again, Falcons really, really messed up that draft pick last year.
Yes, I was team Humphrey. I want everyone to remember I pounded the table for Creed Humphrey on like five different shows. So, you know, I'm absolved. It's not my fault. Yeah.
And he had a 100 RAS score. So I don't know. Like, I just don't know. But when it comes to pass blocking, so remember how Hennessy's pass blocking grade of a 50, a little over 50, was really, really bad? Drew Dahlman in his 68 total snaps had a 40.9 pass blocking grade, which was 60th out of, you know, 64 total centers, which is, you know, well below replacement level. So that's one of the reasons why Hennessy started all 17 games. For as much as Matt Hennessy struggled in pass blocking, the coaching staff did give Drew Dahlman his opportunities and his chances, but he was absolutely horrendous.
Yeah.
You know, in the same issue that Hennessy had, he was an even worse pass blocker. And I get it, sample size is really, really small, but he was really, really bad in that small sample size to the point where, you know, it was really difficult to pull Matt Hennessy for Drew Dahlman, especially because his team was technically in the playoff picture.
Yeah.
You know, all of last season up until the very end. Now, the one thing I'm looking at in the preseason in training camp is their ability to protect the passer, because I know that they're both really good run blockers. But being a really, really good run blocker means nothing, you know, in today's NFL if you can't pass block. Ben Garland for the Atlanta Falcons in his last season was, I think, the third highest graded run blocking center in the NFL, and he was cut by the Falcons after that season because he was such a poor pass protector. In today's NFL, you're pass blocking twice as much as you are running blocking, especially for a team like the Falcons, which will, you know, I know that they want to run the ball a lot more effectively, a lot better, but I feel like this team, you know, the defense still isn't quite, you know, league average. So I think they'll be passing the ball a lot to try and get back into some games. But, you know, with both of these guys, one of them has to separate himself as a pass blocker. That's the easiest way to win the starting job. And if both of them exhibit the same struggles that they showed last season, then this team will have to look elsewhere in free agency, in the draft, you know, at their next center of the future. And that's something that they really, really don't want to do, because there's plenty of holes around this roster that they need to fill. And, you know, them having spent day two picks on centers, or it was a day three pick, an early day three pick, excuse me, on Drew Dahlman. He was taken in the fourth round. Last year. My mistake. Hennessy was a late day two pick. But them having spent a third round pick and a fourth round pick on these guys the last couple of years, you know, that just goes up in smoke. And, you know, those are completely wasted resources. And this is a Falcons team that you know, specialized in wasting resources after that 2016 NFL draft. Thomas Dimitroff and Dan Quinn made a sport out of wasting draft resources and, you know, free agency dollars over the past few years. So this team is still having to pull themselves out of that hole, plus having to plug up all of the other holes on this roster, you know, add center. And that's just another headache that this team does not want to go through, but they will have to go through, you know, that headache of filling in that roster spot if these guys show what they showed last season, because you can't trust them long term. Now, if Hennessy comes back and is a league average pass blocker, in addition to what he did as a run blocker last year, he could be the starting center for the next 10 years. And that's why I'm so high on Matt Hennessy, because all he needs to do is fix that one part of his game, you know, just improve. He doesn't even have to be elite at it. Just get up to league average and you really have something there.
Yeah, I agree. Like I think of the battles that we're talking about, like left guard. I mean, it's not exactly a battle at this point because it's basically just Jalen Mayfield, but the center battle and then right tackle. I feel pretty good about center that neither one of these guys was terrific last year, but I think between the two of them, there's enough there that like one of them will be an average center. So I'm sort of feeling pretty solid about one of those two being like a solid starter for this team. Left guard, you know, I think is much more nerve-wracking, and then right tackle, it's sort of a like, do you believe in Jermaine Ifedi, or are you on McGarry Island with, you know, Aaron Freeman?
It's a very low population on that island.
It's dwindling by the day. I don't know if climate change has something to do with that or not, too. But McGarry Island is shrinking rapidly. I think between Hennessy and Dahlman, we're going to have at least a solid starter at center. So I'm willing to believe in that competition. Where I get a little bit nervous is that we're having no competition at left guard that we know of. Maybe Elijah Wilkinson factors in more there than we expect, or like an undrafted guy like a Ryan Neuzel, who was the Falcons' best offensive lineman in the preseason last year. So don't forget, you know, Ryan Neuzel could be the dark horse. But
here's just how low of a competition that is. We're going through, you know, position by position, and it's mostly Dave Choate doing this. And, you know, I came back from vacation and you know, put my name down for some of these offensive line battles. We're not even writing about the left guard battle just because
there's no battle right now.
There is no battle. It's going to be Jalen Mayfield for better or for worse. And Jalen Mayfield last year led the league in sacks allowed among all offensive linemen, and he was a guard. You know, normally it's your tackle that's giving up sacks. It's a very scary proposition. You know, Jalen Mayfield almost got Matt Ryan killed last season. I think that's one of the reasons why you don't want to start Desmond Ridder behind this offensive line of questionable characters. But, you know, unless Mayfield made major strides, like even if Mayfield comes in having improved from last season, that may not be enough because he was just such a dumpster fire last season. You know, he needs to have vastly improved to be worth it. Like, if he can get up to just below league average at left guard, I'll take that.
That would be a massive improvement. That's the thing. Like, he could improve 20 points in PFF grade and just still be like an average starter.
That would be a quantum leap.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's a quantum. Like, last year he was the worst offensive lineman in football.
Yeah. And like we've talked about it, like he got shafted, he got thrown into a terrible situation. He did not even really get a training camp to play left guard. Like, it's not necessarily like that we're trying to roast Mayfield here. Like, he was done no favors by the staff, by the team in any way. So like, obviously we're really hoping for the best for Mayfield, but it's kind of insane that they haven't brought in competition at all.
Yeah, and just the entire mismanagement of the left guard position has been so completely irresponsible by the Falcons overall last couple of years. Like that's maybe my biggest gripe with this front office so far. I can't really, you know, complain too much because they've been able to do is kind of untangle the large number of knots that Dimitroff left them, and you know, and they're still trying to climb up out of that hole, out of that financial hole. we'll be able to assess them more properly, you know, at this time next year going into training camp of 2023, because we'll see what they can do with actual money, you know, in free agency. But, you know, just left guard in general, James Carpenter in his last year in Atlanta was a solid left guard. And, you know, I get it. You know, they parted ways with him for financial reasons. But you bring in Jalen Mayfield, you draft Jalen Mayfield, okay. There was no competition last year, really, for left guard. I mean, maybe they thought Matt Gono could possibly.
Maybe, yeah.
I mean, I'm not in their heads. I don't know exactly. But the fact that they didn't even give Mayfield any snaps really at left guard throughout training camp is screams irresponsibility to me. That was just completely irresponsible. I get it. Caleb McGarry had a bout with COVID. Yeah. So, you know, he couldn't be there for most of training camp. Matt Gono got hurt. But if you knew that the plan was to start Jalen Mayfield at left guard, there's no reason to, you know, give him exclusive snaps at right tackle.
That was just dumb. Just sign somebody off the street. Just play a UDFA. Don't move the guy you're depending on to be left guard back to tackle for a couple games to get through the like, it's not worth it. Just sign somebody off the street. Like,
and Mayfield didn't really, those were incredibly valuable reps for Mayfield to get because he didn't really play left guard in college.
No,
he was a right tackle in college. And then, you know, first game out there, you throw him out there against Fletcher Cox, you know, in week one at left guard. Second game, you throw him out there against Vita Vea and the Bucks. You know, third game, you throw him out there against the New York Giants, you know, and their very talented defensive line. And in fairness, he did look pretty good against the Giants. But, you know, it was as you'd expect. You just threw him to the wolves. You know, you made him run this gauntlet with no preparation at all. You know, you gave him a squirt gun and you told him to get through hell with it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was very unfair. But the issue is he didn't really improve as much as you would have liked throughout the season with those consistent snaps. Yeah. And now if he doesn't come into this season, you know, vastly improved from what we saw last season, then, you know, who are you going to put out there? You'll have to sign people from the streets.
Yeah, exactly. And that might be what happens. Like, the fact that they haven't done it yet is kind of odd to me, but it seems to me like if you're trying to take the team's perspective, they're going to give all the reps to Mayfield at left guard. They're going to see what he can do. They're going to try to clear the runway for him and give him the opportunity and see what happens. And they're hoping that he can be a starter this year. Okay. But at some point, if he struggles, like if he allows sacks in the preseason, like people are going to be freaking out. Like I'm going to be freaking out. And the good news is there are still some guys out there in free agency. I know someone in the chat mentioned Eric Flowers as an option. That's certainly on the table. I'm partial to Quentin Spain myself as a lower cost option. But if they're looking to pay somebody starting money, Eric Flowers certainly could be an option. And he's only 28, so that's an option. You know, Quentin Spain would be cheaper. So that one as like a 1-year rental. So that, I think that one makes more sense to me. But there are still options, but they could go quick. Like, you know, other teams could have injuries and then those guys are picked up and who the hell knows what's going on. So it's a risky game they're playing by not really doing much there. And like, if there was somebody else that I thought that, like, I guess Justin Schaefer, like maybe they want to see what he can do, but I know you as a UGA fan weren't exactly thrilled.
No, Justin Schaefer is not ready to start week one.
Yeah. Yeah. About that prospect either. So, you know, we'll just see.
That was a questionable pick when we watched it live during the draft.
Yeah. So it's, you know, we'll just have to see. I think that it's a very risky thing that they're doing at left guard. I think it's okay to have a competition at center between two guys you just drafted. At least those guys they had something they could hang their hat on. They're both excellent run blockers. So if you can just coach up the pass blocking, you could have a very good offensive lineman. I think between those two, it's okay. And then right tackle, at least like they brought in Ifedi and Wilkinson, who I think are both sort of passable tackles at worst. Ifedi has been average or better at several stops in his career. His problem was he's a penalty machine, but he did improve that a lot last year, thankfully. So maybe that's behind him. Maybe he's matured a little bit. But in the past, that was sort of his thing. He was actually a really good offensive lineman in terms of blocking, but he'd get like 10 penalties, 12 penalties a year. That would, of course, frustrate the hell out of you. But I guess last year he had far fewer than he usually does. So maybe he's finally gotten that under control. But and then Elijah Wilkinson, I think, is just a good swing tackle sort of guy that can play guard, too. So I think between those guys at right tackle, you're going to have either McGarry getting better or you'll have Ifedi or Wilkinson stepping in. And that gives me some confidence. But left guard is making – that's what's keeping me up at night. That's the one thing, the one spot on offense where I'm like, this
– yeah.
Could go very badly. So
yeah, I'm with you there. I've been driving the Hennessy hype train for the past few months. I think that he may make me look very foolish, but you know, I'm in the Matt Hennessy hive. I think that he will improve that pass blocking after a full off season weightlifting regimen. And you have to remember. Yeah, Hennessy didn't really have a full offseason with the team after getting drafted because of COVID. Mm-hmm. So, that was a bit of a disadvantage in of itself. But I think that, hopefully we'll see him, a lot stronger because that was his main issue. And I think he'll be a very passable center. He'll even be a solid center for the Falcons this season. Left guard is just,
It's very uncomfortable. I feel very uncomfortable about it.
If Jalen Mayfield becomes an average left guard this year, that's probably the biggest leap we've ever seen from anyone ever at that position.
Maybe.
For one offseason.
So, yeah.
I'm not even exaggerating. Like, he was that bad last year.
Yeah,
and the fact that they just had no – they brought in no competition. I'd feel a lot better if they brought in, a veteran left guard to split some training camp snaps with him and to, take over if need be. But, this is my conspiracy theory that, they're going to save some money off Marcus Mariota's head, because if Mayfield is garbage and, Mariota suffers from it and takes a lot of hits, I don't think that the front office will really be losing much sleep at night. Now, the issue will be if you put in Desmond Ridder and Mayfield is just, a turnstile out there, then it's like, all right.
Right.
Now you're messing with the rookie instead of top quarterback. But I think by that point, if Mayfield really is that bad, they'll have signed a veteran free agent off the streets anyway. So that's just, that's a conspiracy theory that I'm pumping at this point.
Yeah, I agree. So I'm certainly hoping that it doesn't get to that point. I mean, I think that they're hoping that Mayfield would be good, but it's like, it's fine to be like, okay, we don't really care because this is a down year anyway, whatever.
Let's see what we have.
Yeah, like, but let's
see what we have with this young guy.
If the offensive line is going to prevent you from like evaluating the rest of this offense, like if it's going to keep you from evaluating Ridder or Mariota or the run game or the passing game, like if it's going to hold you back from seeing, like from you being able to run your offense to some sort of competent level, it's a problem. Like maybe they're not competing for the playoffs, but we still need to evaluate these guys. We still need to get these guys like real reps and like run a functioning offense. So that's where I would take umbrage if that was going to happen. But we'll hope for the best. We'll hope that Mayfield can rebound and prove us haters wrong, and that he has a miraculous turnaround this year. We're certainly pulling for him. It would be a surprise, certainly. All right, so let's. Oh yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, well, do you want to move on to the right tackle position?
Because... go for it. Yeah.
Okay, so Caleb McGarry versus Jermaine Ifedi. This is one where I don't feel as bad about right tackle as I do left guard because of Ifedi's presence. And I mean, McGarry was, much better than Mayfield last year, but Caleb McGarry has not lived up to that draft hype of being the 31st overall pick in 2019, and especially hasn't lived up to that trade up that the Falcons made. It felt like a panic move from Dimitroff, looking back on it, because there was that large run of tackles. And, if you recall, the Falcons didn't really, they were given that ultimatum by Arthur Blank that they had to address the offensive line. which, you know, that's a problem in of itself that the owner's now meddling within the football side of things. But Arthur Blank has gotten more and more comfortable with doing that the past few years. But, you know, that's a story for another team. Jermaine Ifedi has been a penalty machine throughout his career, but I'd rather give up penalties than sacks and quarterback hits. And Caleb McGarry was one of the most proficient players in doing that last year. Judging by tackles who played at least half of their team snaps last year, that was 55 tackles who played at least 50% of their team snaps, both left and right tackles. Caleb McGarry finished 51st in PFF's pass blocking score. Yep. He gave up the fourth most sacks in the NFL among all offensive linemen. So the Falcons had two starters who played the vast majority of games who finished ranked first and fourth overall in sacks allowed. And their center, who didn't finish, you know, in that top five, thankfully, gave up the most quarterback hurries in the NFL. So you can tell why. You can tell why the Falcons had so many struggles on offense last year. Remember last year going into training camp, you and I were discussing Caleb McGarry.
Yeah.
And, you know, I told you McGarry had to be a positive player, a positive impact player, because we didn't think that Hennessy and Mayfield would really make that positive impact. And you can't go into a season with three negative offensive linemen, no matter how good your other two old linemen are. And Matthews and Lindstrom were very good. Lindstrom was, you know, one of the best guards in football.
Yeah.
But if you have three weak links along your offensive line, then that offense can't flourish. It just can't. You know, football is won in the trenches. I don't care how modern you get. If your O-line is just allowing pressure over and over again, you're not going to have success. And McGarry not only did not take that next step that we were looking at of him, from him, but he actually took a step back. His pass blocking was as bad as it was in his rookie year, at least according to PFF's grade. And in his rookie year, he allowed the most sacks in the NFL. You know, sure, he was a solid run blocker, but, you know, this goes back to that point about pass blocking versus run blocking. McGarry spent twice as many snaps in pass protection as he did as a run grader. As a result, he was very much a net negative for the Falcons. And it's not a surprise at all why the Falcons rejected that fifth-year option, because he wasn't worth that fifth-year option.
Yeah.
You know, he has had his flashes. But, you know, it's just been maddening just how inconsistent he's been. He hasn't been able to string those good games together. Jermaine Ifedi comes in, and he's a very solid, you know, I would say average tackle in the NFL. He started everywhere he's went. Every single season of his career, he has been a bona fide starter. With Seattle, he was also a 31st overall pick, just like McGarry. With Seattle, he was a disaster in his rookie year as a right guard. They shifted him over to right tackle, and he became, you know, a slightly better than average pass protector, even though his run blocking fell off a little bit. McGarry's a better run blocker than Ifedi has been thus far, or at least last season. But Ifedi's a much better pass protector, and I would much rather my right tackle be a better pass blocker than a run blocker. Here's a stat that I found for my article on the right tackle battle, which is probably going to get published in these next couple days, but this is just a small taste. Ifedi in his career has had 3,370 career snaps as a pass blocker. Caleb McGarry in his career thus far has had 1,954 snaps as a pass blocker. So just under 2,000. Ifedi has, you know, had about 1,400 more snaps as a pass blocker than McGarry in their respective careers. Ifedi has allowed fewer sacks than Caleb McGarry. In those 1,400 more snaps, he's allowed 25 sacks. Caleb McGarry's allowed 26 snaps. He's allowed 18 quarterback hits. McGarry's allowed 32 career quarterback hits.
Yeah.
So McGarry has 14 more quarterback hits allowed and 1,400 fewer snaps. Like, if Eddie can be as much of a penalty machine as he wants, but I'm taking that over what we've seen from McGarry 10 times out of 10. And it's not even like McGarry has a lot of youth on his side. He's just 1 year younger than Jermaine Ifedi, even though it feels like Ifedi's been around forever. Remember, McGarry was an older rookie. He was 24 as a rookie, whereas Ifedi was 22 when he came into the league.
Yeah.
I think my hot take is that this will be a training camp battle and a preseason battle where Jermaine Ifedi wins it. And I think that Ifedi will be the starting right tackle. Because, you know, Caleb McGarry thus far in his career has had three seasons where he's lived off of that draft pedigree and where the team has not brought in, you know, any legitimate competition for him. Sure, we were trying to talk up Matt Gono a little bit last year, but I don't think that the team ever had any intention of legitimately giving Matt Gono a shot at that starting right tackle spot. And then he got injured anyway, so it's all a moot point. This is the first time in his career where McGarry has had a legitimate competitor. And the reason why the team brought in that legitimate competitor who has started at every single stop of his career is because he's just been so disappointing these past 3 years. And
yeah.
You know, 3 years later, I think it's fair to say that Caleb McGarry has been a bust in the NFL thus far.
Yeah, especially like I feel like I had Caleb McGarry as a third round grade, I believe, that year. I feel like if he had gotten drafted in the third round and had this career, we would be like more complimentary of him, because I feel like for a third round pick, him being sort of a fringe level starter, good run blocker, mediocre pass protector, I think the perception of him would be different. But because they traded up for him and took him in the first round, he's a bust, like you said. Like it's just,
you're right, it would be more bearable if he was, you know, a third rounder. But I think even as a third rounder,
yeah,
he hasn't just been a mediocre pass protector. He's been awful pass protector.
Yeah, he has. Yeah. Like, he'd probably be a swing tackle if he was drafted in the third round.
Yeah, he would not be starting. He wouldn't have been handed that starting job on a silver platter last season if he was a third rounder. And, you know, we wouldn't be making that big of a deal about it. I think with Caleb McGarry the last couple of years, I've prefaced almost every single comment about Caleb McGarry with the comment, I hope that he proves me wrong, because, you know, it's always a criticism where I say, I don't think that McGarry really is going to be that good, but I hope he proves me wrong. And up until this point, he has never proven me or you wrong.
We keep waiting. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I keep waiting for him to prove me wrong. And, you know, time is running out, because that fifth-year option wasn't exercised. If McGarry doesn't win this competition, and if he doesn't really have a really good season, and, you know, I'm not just talking about an average season that we saw in his second year, for example. I mean, he needs to have a legitimately good season, a career year, the best year of his career thus far.
Yeah.
I think for him to come back with the Falcons next season, because, you know, sure, he was a first rounder, but it wasn't this regime that drafted him.
And they're going to be paying Lindstrom, not him. So
yeah, the last regime that drafted him got fired. Like, they're not here anymore. And, you know, part of that reason was because of picks like McGarry that ended up being busts.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and it's do or die for McGarry, and maybe this situation didn't get his option. This is like the opposite of Vic Beasley, right? Like, Vic Beasley, they pick up his option after two down years, and then, of course, he has another down year. But this scenario, maybe if they'd done this, right, they don't give him the option, they're like, no, you gotta earn this next contract. Maybe this lights a fire under his ass, and you know, this helps motivate him, or whatever he needs to get to where he needs to be. Maybe it's like a miracle and he has a big turnaround and he's great, and I'm totally open to that happening. But yeah,
I hope so. That would be a best case scenario for the Falcons. And, you know, not only did he get his option rejected, but also they brought in legitimate competition.
Oh, yeah, two
maybe
guys.
Maybe
this
does, you know, light a fire under him to really, you know, come back better than ever. And to play better than ever, because he has never really had this kind of pressure up until this point. You know, up until now, if he plays bad, he plays bad. He's all we've really got at right tackle. Yep. And, you know, that you can't really sign a tackle off the streets, because this is a very valuable position. You know, even though you're not covering the blind side like a left tackle is, you know, good tackles aren't just found in free agency at this point. If someone's a good tackle, he's going to get scooped up by some team, because even rebuilding teams, contending teams, even rebuilding teams value good tackles, because, you know, then you have that young quarterback who isn't getting beaten to a pulp every single time he drops back.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you mentioned it with McGarry. It hasn't been good enough, and this is his time that he has to do it now. This is when it has to happen if he wants to get a lucrative extension in Atlanta or elsewhere, or else he's going to end up like a Jason Spriggs, where he's playing swing tackle for somebody. And I don't think his career is going to be over if he has a mediocre year this year, but he's going to be a swing tackle then. Like, he's not going to be a starter anymore. He's going to be a backup. And I certainly think he's an NFL caliber tackle. He can play in the league, but he's not a guy that anyone's running out to start at this point. But you've got a guy like Jermaine Ifedi, like Adnan mentioned, who was known for his penalties early on. I was going back through, I believe he led the league in penalties with 19 in 2017, which was his, like, I think first year as like a full-time starter, which is hilarious. That's a lot of penalties. Still graded out like as like a pretty good pass blocker, even with 19 penalties, which is really funny. And then he had 11 penalties in 2018, so still not good. 13 penalties in 2019, obviously still not good. But the last 2 years, just 5 penalties in 2020, and just 4 last year in 2021. So maybe that's finally something he's gotten under control. So, you know, Fetty's a little bit hot-headed sometimes, very animated player. He's definitely the type of guy that if, like, someone cheap shots his quarterback, he's going to pancake them. And, like, I think fans that's probably would like that about him.
Yeah, like, you want to play within the boundaries, and, you know, I'm all for that. But, yeah, no, I'll definitely take some emotion, you know, even the bad with the good. With someone like Ifedi. And the other thing with Ifedi is he's been very durable throughout his career. Last year, he landed on IR in October with a knee injury. But before that, I think he's only missed 4 games.
Just a handful of games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 4 games in his career and 1 game since his rookie season.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, Jermaine Ifedi's your prototypical, very solid tackle. Like, he's your league average solid tackle. And I at this point, that's a hell of an upgrade over what we've gotten from McGarry the past few years. And, you know, I think that if Ifedi wins that position and, you know, plays well this season, he could be the guy that's given that long-term extension with Atlanta. Like, he's also playing for something here.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, a lot of people, I feel like Ifedi's been around the NFL like forever. He's like almost exactly the same age as Caleb McGarry, I think. Like, McGarry.
He's a year older than McGarry.
Yeah. He's, what is this? McGarry is 27.4 according to PFF, and Ifedi is 28.1. So they're not even a year apart. Like, they're pretty much, I mean, you know, obviously McGarry's a little bit younger, but McGarry was an older rookie. Ifedi was a super young rookie, so, like, they're kind of in the same place in terms of their career, so, like, maybe it's Ifedi that we're talking about getting a lucrative extension with the Falcons and not McGarry at the end of the year. That is certainly within the realm of possibility. I do feel better about this right tackle group than I do certainly left guard. So.
Yeah, and if Ifedi can play well, I mean, I'll take a league average or slightly above league average, you know, tackle any day, especially if you can get him for less than elite tackle money, because I don't know if it's inflation or what, but these tackles are making some money out there in free agency.
Oh yeah.
If Ifedi can play well and, you know, you can ink him to $7-8 million a year, that would be a coup. That would be a hell of a deal for getting your long-term right tackle, because, you know, 28 years old, Ifedi can go out there and he can play for the next 5, 6, 7 years. you know, he can play well into his mid-30s, like a lot of these offensive linemen do.
Yeah.
Especially because he has been so durable. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why I think this is a legitimate competition. I don't think that this is like a few years ago, what we saw with Wes Schweitzer and Ben Garland.
Right. Or Skinner, right.
Where, yeah, that was like a competition. They were about, you know, near the same when it came to their talent and what they had done in the NFL up to that point. But I think Schweitzer was like 5 years younger.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, like, you know, you're definitely rooting for the young guy, and the coaching staff is probably going to side with the younger guy. Hefetti and McCary, the fact that they're almost the same age,
yeah,
that definitely means something. It means something that the front office that drafted McGarry isn't the front office making that decision, and isn't the coaching staff that is making that decision. You know, both of these guys have a number of years left in the NFL if they play well, and it's going to be a legitimate spirited competition. I think Ifedi's going to win it because he is a superior pass protector, but just because McGarry has played in the NFL 3 years fewer, that means nothing here.
Yeah, like, because they're the same age, basically. Yeah.
If McGarry was 4 years younger than Ifedi, we're having a different conversation here. But
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, Ifedi is up there. It would not surprise me one bit if Jermaine Ifedi was the right tackle of this team for the next few years. Not one bit if he plays well.
Yeah, I mean, I think that might shock some people, you predicting Ifedi winning the right tackle spot, but it doesn't surprise me. I mean, I think this is going to be pretty much an open competition. We haven't heard as much about it compared to center, which has been pretty much made clear that that's an open competition, but I think right tackle will be the same way, and I won't be shocked if it is Ifedi that comes out on top there, both this year and potentially in the future, because, I mean, it's possible that they could be in the running for a high tackle like in the draft next year, but it depends on where they end up, because if they're picking really high, it's probably going to be Will Anderson. If they're further down, you know, who knows what will happen. But I think having someone like an Ifedi that you could turn to, re-sign for like a reasonable starting contract as like a bridge guy for a couple more years while you look maybe for another young tackle, I think that sounds like a great plan. Or maybe you draft a day two tackle to develop behind Ifedi. So I feel a lot better certainly about right tackle than I do about left guard. And center, I mean, I feel about the same, I guess, as the center. I think we'll be doing all right there. All right. Well, before we get to anything else, to any other battles you want to talk about, do want to remind folks to please like and subscribe. We appreciate all those metrics. Leave a comment after the show. Click that little bell button to get notifications when we go live. We really appreciate everyone tuning in with us for the last show of the dead season. If you're the final show of the dead season, folks. If you're interested in helping support our training camp travel expenses, you can donate at the link in the show description. I believe it's streamlabs.com/thefalcoholic. We appreciate all that help. Make sure you leave a question or a comment with your donation. We will read that, whether you drop it during the show or if you drop it after the show airs, we'll read it on the next live show to make sure we get those in. Really appreciate everyone for chipping in thus far. And you do have the opportunity to do that all the way through camp. So if you're, you know, if you don't want to do it tonight, thinking about doing it later, if you want to save your questions for during camp for more pressing topics, I understand. That all works out just fine. So thank you guys so much for that. And also, I'll plug the Patreon if you're interested in getting involved with that. Our fantasy leagues are filling up now, so if you're interested in taking part in the Patreon fantasy leagues, the link to sign up there is patreon.com/falcoholiclive. Those were a lot of fun.
I made a commitment this year to be a part of the fantasy league.
Adnan will be in one of them at least. So yeah.
Wait, there's more than one.
Yeah. They'll probably have to be two this year because we have like 30 patrons now. So, you don't have to be in more than one, but you know, just being in one is helpful. I don't think Dave's going to play in all of them either. So, you know,
I don't, I'll think about it, just because outside of this, I only have one league. I have my home league.
Oh that, yeah.
I have my home league that I've been in forever.
Yeah.
So, you know, three fantasy leagues won't stretch.
Won't stretch it too far. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see how many we need. You know, we'll see.
I was in like six or seven. I don't, just a tangent, I don't understand how some people can be in like 10 different fantasy leagues. That just does, like, I get it. Everyone has their own home league that they like focus on. I don't see how that's enjoyable to just keep up with that many fantasy leagues. Like, drafting is fun, but then after that, just like, you know, you're starting Cooper Kupp and you're going up against Cooper Kupp in another league. And it's like, you know,
I'm very conflicted. Yeah.
It doesn't seem that fun. Like, it just seems like a chore at that point.
Yeah. You can play some best ball where you don't set your lineup every week. Those help. If I'm playing in a bunch of leagues, you could do some best ball leagues where you don't set your lineup, and those aren't so bad. But
Like, people can do whatever they want. Like, you know, people enjoy what they enjoy. I'm just a firm believer that, you know, two or three fantasy leagues, three is my max.
I think that's the sweet spot, two to three.
But I couldn't do more than like one home league that you really focus on, and, you know, with your friends and your trash talking and everything. And then one, like, other league that you can keep up with. But, you know, and then a third one would be fine. But, like, five, six, seven leagues, then it's
all right. Like, I did 5 1 year. I thought that was a little too much. But I think that 2 to 3 is probably the sweet spot. Because one, like, if you only do one, there's the chance that you just bomb. And then you're just like, well, this sucks for the whole season. So I like to have a couple of backups. Because if you play 3 leagues, at least you're probably doing good in at least one of them. But
Last year I was only in the one. And, I mean, you know, I made the playoffs. So it was enjoyable.
That works, yeah.
But it's like, like you say, if you know, sometimes that's not failing enough.
Sometimes it can be rough.
You know, you only experience one draft. You're only looking at one lineup, you know, all season long.
Yeah. I think there is we're getting to the sweet spot here, 2 to 3 leagues. So, all right. Any other position groups you want to talk about tonight? We haven't touched on the defense at all.
Yeah, we really went all in on the
offense. Well, I mean, honestly, that's what needed it the most. Like, that was the most important one by far. So, I mean, it needed, a whole show, basically, on the offensive line.
Nobody can say that we didn't have a comprehensive analysis about Atlanta's offensive line. Like, we tore apart the offensive line. And, we didn't talk about left tackle and right guard because we don't need to.
Nothing to say there. It's all good. Yep, all good there. Great job, guys. Yeah.
Keep it up, Jake and Chris. You know, hopefully
just give him a pat on the back. Yep.
Hopefully you guys have more help this season.
Yeah. I mean, I guess edge is basically wide open. But there's, you know, I think we could see another veteran addition there. We'll see. The interior defensive line, now that Goldman has retired, is suddenly more interesting again, because I do think there's like a non-zero chance that Marlon Davidson, especially once Eddie Goldman got signed, it was like, oh, is Marlon Davidson on the chopping block? Now that Goldman is not here, I think Marlon Davidson's probably pretty safe again, but it's worth talking about maybe. I don't know if there's any other spots that you wanted to touch on defense at all.
Maybe safety, you know, that's going to be a decent little competition. We probably know the cornerback.
Yeah.
The rotation at this point, I'm pretty confident in Isaiah Oliver winning that nickel job. You have Terrell, you have Hayward. I think the cornerbacks are going to be very, very good. You know, not just solid. I think this will be maybe even a top 10 cornerback unit in the NFL when all is said and done. Remember, Isaiah Oliver was one of the best nickel corners in the NFL last year before his injury. Hayward is one of, if he can stay healthy, I think he'll be one of the best cornerback twos. And, you know, I think Terrell is already a top five cornerback in the league. I think last year only Jalen Ramsey was better than him, according to PFF. And, you know, he should only get better. Safety, you know, I definitely like to see Richie Grant win that safety battle. I'm excited to see the continued development of Jalen Hawkins, who looks like he was a steal on day three. He looked really good last year. Definitely not as much to touch on as offensive line, but, you know, those are some of the positions. And I really want to see these young guys really get a chance along the edge. I think it's different when it comes to rookies in especially in a position where, you know, you have some scarcity, a pass rusher. The Falcons last year were by far the worst pass rush in the NFL. I think it's different starting rookies, you know, along edge on defense than it is, say, starting a rookie quarterback, just because those positions are completely different monsters. Like, it's much more difficult for a starting quarterback in the NFL because, you know, everything, the entire franchise is on your shoulders. You're the CEO. Whereas if you're, you know, rotating at outside linebacker or a defensive end, that's a lot more manageable. And, you know, the Falcons have some definite young talent, you know, along the edge. Lorenzo Carter is here this year. Ogundeji showed some flashes last year. Mm-hmm. You have Ebikadi, who you got in the second round, and D'Angelo Malone, whom scouts were raving about, Malone and Ebikadi. So, you know, I'm excited to see what the pass rush does this year for sure. Let's see if they can give Grady Jarrett some help along that.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely like that edge group better, especially from a long-term perspective, than last year where there was, like, just nothing. It was like Dante Fowler and Steven Means as your starters. I mean, it was just really, really rough. But I think your group now of, like, Lorenzo Cardell and Ebikadi and D'Angelo Malone and Ogundeji, I think those guys I like a lot better. Like, I think we're going to see some positive stuff from that group. Even if it's not going to be a great pass rush this year, it should be like 20th, 22nd, you know, instead of like 32nd. And that will make a big difference, certainly, especially if the coverage is as good as we're sort of expecting it to be. Like, that could be enough for this to be an average pass defense. Even if the pressure's not great, if the coverage is great and the pressure's sort of a little bit below average, but not terrible, like that can be a decent passing defense still. So, the interior, there's certainly a lot of question marks there. You know, well, obviously we have Grady Jarrett and we have Anthony Rush and we have Taquan Graham, but yes, friend of the show, Anthony Rush, a man of culture, clearly, who's basically got an unquestioned path to the nose tackle once again, which I think is fine. Like, I wasn't really concerned about Rush at all at nose tackle. You know, I think Eddie Goldman's signing was almost as much about the pass rush as the run defense, even though he's a nose tackle. He is one of those pass rushing nose tackles. So, you know, I think maybe in some ways it's more likely the Falcons might actually sign another pass rusher or sort of go for keeping another pass rushing type as opposed to getting another nose tackle in here, but we'll see.
I think for what it's worth, the defense is going to be improved from last year.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think so.
I think the secondary has a lot more potential. Like, this defense will, they'll be led by these corners. They'll be led by the secondary. Like, make no mistake about it. But, you know, you have some young talent, some legitimate young talent along that defensive and outside linebacker rotation. Like, this isn't talent where, you know, you sign some undrafted free agent guy and he's a young guy and you're like, oh, we have young talent. Like, that's not legitimate young talent. No offense to these undrafted guys. But you have guys who were, you know, legitimately good college players who you invested legitimate draft picks in. Ebikadi was a second rounder. You know, D'Angelo Malone was a third rounder. And, you know, even some of these linebackers, like, I'm eager to see what Deion Jones can do. Last year was a disappointing year, but, you know, he ended up having surgery in the offseason. So maybe he was hampered by that. I think it was a shoulder injury last season. You know, let's see if he can kind of lead this defense and, you know, set an example. You know, I'm definitely still against what I saw from him last year and sort of giving up on plays. I think that's unacceptable no matter what. Michael Walker has, you know, shown nothing but good flashes whenever he's hit the field, except he hasn't really gotten as many snaps as we would have liked. But there are a lot of vacated snaps from Foye Oluokun leaving for Jacksonville. You know, Rashawn Evans is a solid guy that Dean Pease obviously believes in. I don't think Troy Anderson will really make a huge impact outside of special teams, not in year one. But, you know, Nick Kwiatkowski is another underrated signing who is a very, very solid linebacker. I think he'll start next to Jones. We could have something with this defense, you know, especially if some of those young pass rushers play above their heads and play above expectations. I think this team is really only missing a pass rush at this point, like a legitimate pass rush. You know, everything else, you can believe in the young guys, and that includes the pass rush as well. Like, at least now, if the pass rush is bad, you can say, all right, at least those are young guys, those are rookies, you know, learning the position. Whereas before, it's like the pass rush is shit with Vic Beasley and Tag McKinley, and it's like, all right, these guys just suck. Like, we have no future here.
I think that, you know, we'll see what happens with Deion Jones. I know Aaron Freeman believes that he will be cut if they can't find a trade partner. So I don't know.
That would be one of the more high-profile cuts in the NFL. I think it's a non-zero chance, but I don't know. I wouldn't be. I'm not that spicy about it. I wouldn't make it that spicy at this point.
No, I mean, he's saying that he has it on good authority that Deion
Oh,
Jones will be cut.
he has legitimate inside information.
Yes, without saying, you know, too much about it. I believe he was saying sort of that he's been told by some sort of source that the Falcons want to trade Jones, but if they can't, that Deion Jones will be cut.
I
Possibly
definitely
before
believe they
training
want to
camp
trade him.
even
I
starts.
believe they want to trade
Oh,
him.
yeah, big time.
I think they've been looking to trade him. I have no sources. I have no authority here.
No, I haven't heard anything else either, but
Like, no, we did not hear anything from the team. This is our
no.
speculation.
Yep.
But I to cut it. If they cut him, that'll just tell me that they're worried about his influence on these other
Yeah,
players.
exactly. Like that they basically just want they want to get the young guy snaps, I think is what it would be. Like they don't want Dion taking away snaps from the other guys, and they'll eat half the dead cap this year and half next year instead of eating some next year. So you know, they certainly can do it. It saves them a little bit of money. They clearly don't necessarily need him. And if he, so we'll see what happens. I mean, I think it's not exactly financially advantageous to cut him this year, but I mean, if he's not in their plans at all, you know, it would make sense. And I think if they were to trade him, they'd probably have to take on pretty decent amount of the contract. We'll see. But I mean, maybe being able to trade him for anything would be worth it. So we'll see. Because if they cut him, they're barely saving anything. So even if they have to pay most of his contract and they save just a little bit more and get like a sixth round pick out of it, you know, maybe that's worth it for them. But yeah, I mean, I think we've covered most of the big ones here. Obviously, we'll be watching the safety battle really closely between, you know, Jalen Hawkins, Richie Grant, Eric Harrison, Dean Marlowe. I think all four of those guys could start, like could potentially say that they have the talent to start. Harris and Marlowe certainly have started very recently. You know, Harris here in Atlanta last year, and Marlowe for Detroit. I think he started 9 games last year. So there, that's a good, I think, quartet of safeties. I don't think any of them, at least until we see what we've got in Grant and Hawkins this year, are like high-end safeties, but I think those are four like sort of solid starter caliber safeties, and that's just a good solid group there. So we'll see what comes of that, if any of those guys can really step up. But I think that secondary with those great corners in front of them, just having solid safeties is like enough. If you've got great cornerback play and solid safeties, you can have a really good secondary. So yeah, I don't know if there's anything else you wanted to touch on, Adnan, before we wrap up the final off-season show of the season?
No, I think we hit a lot of it. You know, I think we hit everything that we needed to at this point.
Yes, you guys should be exhaustively prepared, particularly for the offensive line battles, which are the most important ones. But also, we touched on some of the defensive ones too. So we hope you guys enjoyed that. That you're all ready for training camp to start. On Wednesday will be the first practice, I believe, and then the first public practice will be on Friday of next week. So looking forward to that. I will. Oh, go
Oh,
ahead. Go ahead.
do you know, this is just a question for you personally. Do you know if those Sundays are going to be private practices, or if they'll be, or if they're just off days?
I would have to look that up. I think I might know, but I'll tell you off air. I probably have to pull up an email or something to find it.
No, if they're private practices, I'm definitely interested in getting a media pass for
Okay.
those and coming for those.
I'll look it up once we wrap. if those are actual practice days or not.
I don't see why they would make the. I mean, just in general, I don't like Sundays being non-private. I don't like Sundays not being public practices just because.
It's a good day for it, yeah.
Yeah, like the fan, like training camp, yeah, it's for the players, but I think it's for the fans as much as anything else. It's a chance for, you know, a lot of the fans to go out to Flowery Branch and watch their favorite team, you know, go through practice. And, you know, just taking away Sundays from a lot of these fans who work, you know, throughout the weekdays, that just seems a bit distasteful, in my opinion. Like, if it is an off day, then it's like, why can't Tuesday be an off day?
Right. Why pick Sunday specifically? I don't know. I don't know what's going on with that. But yeah, I'll look it up once we finish up what the actual days are, so I can let you know. But yeah, guys, I will be there starting Wednesday. I'll be there Wednesday the 27th through, I believe it's Wednesday the 3rd. So the whole first week. We'll be having daily shows or close to daily shows to give you guys the latest news and notes. And of course, I'll have my clips and tweets and all that stuff going up on the Twitter account and on thefalcoholic.com. So look out for that stuff. Really excited to bring you guys some in-person coverage. It's been a while since it's been since February, I think, that I've seen football in person. So excited to get back out there. Hopefully the weather won't be too brutal, but it's been pretty hot here in Syracuse, so I can only imagine what it's going to be like in Atlanta next week. But, guys, we really appreciate everyone hanging out with us tonight. Like I said before, like and subscribe, click that little bell button, leave a comment after the show to help us grow. If you're interested in supporting our training camp expenses, you can donate to that at any time. The link to that's in the show description. If you're interested in the Patreon, it's patreon.com/falcoholiclive. And we just really appreciate everyone tuning in and supporting us. It really means a lot to us, guys. Before we sign off, want to thank my co-host tonight, Adnan Ikic at Say Which Way, for his very in-depth contributions, particularly to the offensive line. You were just rattling off the stats, like, one after the other. It was very impressive work there, Adnan. Anything else that you'd like to plug before we sign off tonight?
Speaking of the offensive line, I mentioned earlier, the center battle, where, you know, I rattled off some of those stats about Dahlman and Hennessy. That article went live today, that got published today, and the one discussing the right tackle battle will go in the next couple days. So, you know, definitely check that out. And we're about to ramp up, just like how the Falcons are about to start ramping up. We're about to start ramping up here at the Falcoholic. You know, the dead period is only the dead period until training camp. Now that we have actual stories coming up, we'll have a lot more stuff to write about, you know, instead of just, you know, speculating on the season blindly. We'll actually have some things of substance to discuss and to analyze. So, you know, it's always an exciting time for the website now.
Yep, it is. It's a great time. It's a fun time. Looking forward to bringing you guys that content, and it's going to be a good one this year. It's going to be a very exciting training camp, I think, to dig into.
And it'll be the most exciting preseason in a while.
He's going to play the starters. He's already said it. I'm going to hold him to that now. So you guys also have our play-by-play to look forward to. Hopefully it'll be a little bit more entertaining in the second half now than it has been at times in the past. So, guys, we are almost there. Just one more week of quiet before the floodgates open. Again, guys, thank you so much for your support, for your viewing. We will see you guys next week. May have an early week episode if any news comes out. Otherwise, we'll have a show for you on Wednesday. And then for the next 7 days that I'm there, we'll be doing daily updates as well. So until then, guys, we'll talk to you next week here on The Falcoholic Live. Check out the site, thefalcoholic.com, for all that great written content. You can follow me at Falcoholic Kevin as well to get all that training camp intel. Until then, guys, thank you so much for watching. We will see you next week on The Falcoholic Live. Have a great night, folks.